Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
And you're very welcome to Golf Weekly here on this Wednesday morning, the morning after the night before where Messi decided, you know what, I don't want the career to end just yet. So, lads, Dave, Gary, I presume you watched the match. It was on at a reasonable hour.
Yes. It was one, yet another brilliant game in a whole series of amazing matches at this World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that the first 75 minutes were a little on the meh side for him.
It was fascinating, though, when you think you're watching the world champions and Messi go out and Egypt look in total control.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, this is a golf podcast, so we're not going to linger long on the little genius continuing his journey. Chris Gotterup, on the other hand. Gary, am I correct in saying that a few weeks ago you name-checked him as a serious player?
I remember chatting to Mark Power about, I think it was at a rugby match this year in February. And Mark played college with him. And the first day he played with him, he just said the sound of the strike was just mental. So he's very individual action and unique style. But like all great players, he gets the club face back on the ball. Doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you can repeat it. And he's an absolute crusher. And also with golf, you know, he won his tournament here last year. He's obviously defending, got into Portrush, finished third. I think he then won maybe twice this year. And then he just, you know, slowed down a little bit, fell out a bit of form, which happens with the sport. And a big win last week with a little bit of help from his friends, no doubt. As he always needs a slice of luck, but just the perfect intro, really, into coming back over this side to try to defend the Scottish, and probably won't do it this week, but I think he's a big danger for next week.
Yeah, so he won the John Deere with a 62 and coming from five shots behind. So that's five PGA Tour wins, Dave, since spring of 2024. So only Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy have won more in that space of time. So he won Myrtle Beach, he won the Scottish Open, Sony Open, the Phoenix Open, and the John Deere. Like, this is a guy, and despite, like, when you look at his swing, now I think his swing gives hope to everybody because it goes to, so long as you can get the club face square into the back of the ball, it doesn't really matter where. I mean, it doesn't matter as much what you do beforehand. But this is a guy, like as the kids say, he's a baller.
Yeah, this guy fascinates me. He's a baller to an extent. Like, to win five times since early last year, mid-May last year, or in 2024 rather, is incredible. As you say, it's a win percentage that is up there with pretty much anybody, bar maybe Scheffler on the PGA Tour. But he's of a certain type of winner when it comes to a fairly mundane, run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event. he seems to be able to just dominate the field. And now, I know he didn't dominate the field this time around, and he needed a little bit of help from others for him to win the John Deere Classic. Now, as I'm saying that, I understand that he's won the Scottish Open. He's held off the likes of Rory McIlroy. And the Phoenix Open is obviously not a massive event, but has big crowds and an atmosphere, and certain holes, obviously, that we know is as hostile, if it's against you, as it can be anywhere else in the PGA Tour. The point I'm trying to make is that it's probably time now for Chris Goddard to take that next step. The way we talked about Cam Young in major terms after he won the Players' Championship and didn't really get going, bar a little bit of a run at Augusta National so far this year. It's now Chris Goddard has to start really contending at places like Muirfield Village, for example, at the Arnold Palmer, and really make that step up in towards Players' Championship and major championships. But he's clearly a guy who knows how to win and is not remotely fazed when he finds himself in contention on a Sunday, regardless of what sort of an event it is. And he has won by massive margins, like his first PGA Tour win. He won by 6 strokes, and he's won by a couple of strokes and in a playoff at the Phoenix Open against Matsuyama earlier this year. And then today, sort of snatching it with some really good golf on the back nine, and then reliant on mistakes from others. So he's won it all different types of ways. I love the point you made about his swing, because for people, including myself, whose swing is just like a Banjak's box of spanners, the knowledge that ultimately, as you say, all you have to do is just find a way to get the club face square behind that ball when it does eventually reach it is all that matters. Now, I, like many others, have not figured out a way to do that. Chris Goddard obviously has. And he's another example of, in an era where we've got so many sort of boy band swings coming out of the collegiate system, that clearly his coach saw an ability to be able to strike the ball properly, and did not try and dismantle his swing and reconstruct it. Just said, look, this guy, as per Scheffler, swings a certain way. As long as he's striking the ball properly, let him away with it.
Mm. Gary, I mean, he obviously has serious length. He's a big, big hitter. But like, the other aspects of his game have really come on, I think, over the last year or so. His short game, his putting, his general iron play, which suggests that he is going from a long hitter who can have a good occasional week to someone who can contend more and become a proper all-round player.
There's no doubt. And the big thing is he's an elite putter when he's under pressure.
Yeah.
Because you can go on about, you know, because he'd be known as in the game as a heavy hitter. You know, it's a noisy strike.
Go on, explain that to me a bit. Like, what does that mean? It's like, is there a kind of like a hidden, not a hidden insult, but is there like a little kind of, you know, a little critique in there? Not by you, but like if he's known as a heavy hitter.
No, it's no different to anyone. It's, you know, when you hit that flush shot, it's compressed. So he compresses the ball all the time.
Whereas, all right, so it's a very good thing that he's...
Yeah, totally. Hitting. It's, you know, it's steep angle of attack. He's brilliant loft at impact. The kind of two things you need to be a good iron player. Whereas most people, you know, your weekend warrior pins it and scoops it and all of that kind of stuff. And even he hit a pitch shot the other day, and bizarrely the commentator said he hit that in really low with a lot of spin. That's kind of the way you're supposed to be playing those shots, you know. And for everyone listening, you know, get your most loft to club and try hit it as low as you possibly can with spin. And then you're getting a downward strike on it and you're de-lofting the shot. That's the counterintuitiveness of golf, which is hard to comprehend. Everyone wants to get under it and scoop it up. But he's got that facet where he's got that elite level power and a good bit of accuracy with it too. I know that's a bit of a misnomer nowadays, but you know, you're not slashing it out of the munchies all the time winning golf tournaments. But then he's got the nice parts to his game, that he can get it up and down and do that stuff. And putting under pressure. You know, that's the hardest thing for guys trying to make a breakthrough. Like, a lot of them, I like that reference actually from Dave, the boy band swing. I've never heard that before. Everyone wants a boy band swing, but results are all that matter, really.
For someone like Goddard, lads, like, he came into the, like, I think he's the highest ranked player, or he was the highest ranked player in the field. So that brings with it its own pressure. Like, you know, he's expected to perform, and he did. under that pressure, which does that mark him out as, okay, he's the guy who delivers?
I think it does. Yeah, I think, well, when it happens with this regularity, it does. Look, he's already compiled a PGA Tour career that most aspiring professionals would dream of.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many that have toiled out there for years and years and have maybe come close on a couple of occasions, but have never actually entered the winner circle, and maybe they've earned a good living from it. But like, a five-time PGA Tour winner is a rarity. And as you say, and as I said earlier, maybe three of the five wins, you could argue maybe four of the five wins, have been in less than stellar fields. And he turns up and he looks around the driving range, and as opposed to thinking to himself, I mean, I should be beating all of these guys, that brings with it a pressure. He obviously turns up, looks around and goes, I'm going to beat all of these guys. If I play well, I will win. And that's an incredible feeling to have. And he, you know, he's maybe going to play, as he goes on in his career, fewer and fewer of these types of events, because he's obviously going to be in every major championship. He's going to be in the top 50 of the world rankings, and he's going to be playing all the signature events. So the sort of events that he won at the weekend, you know, the John Deere, 2 weeks out from the vast majority of the players having to go transatlantic and play a couple of weeks in Europe, he's probably not going to be playing these very often. So it's going to become harder for him to win, but for a guy who knows how to win, that obviously stands him in good stead.
Gary, I don't know about you, but he strikes me as an immensely likable character, like someone who genuinely enjoys playing golf, which, dare I say, is not the norm amongst the top end professionals, who perhaps, like, having been worn down by the grind of it all, just end up seeing it as more of a profession. But Goddard seems to take genuine pleasure out of playing the game.
Well, I think last weekend was kind of special too. And I don't know the backstory as to why his regular caddy wasn't there. Maybe he's in between caddies, but he had his brother on the back. And, you know, I'm sure that was a little more special. And the fact that, I don't know, John Deere, he probably got, what, 1.8 million maybe. So 180 bags of sand for his bro is pretty cool stuff. And, and I suppose as well a realization that, you know, because sometimes those off weeks were, now I'm not saying he's treating the John Deere lightly. I don't know what happened with the caddy, but he kind of did it on his own too, obviously with the help of his brother. But that's another string to his bow and another reinforcement that, you know, he can trust himself down the stretch regardless of the situation. But the enjoyment, like the enjoyment factor has to be there at that stage. I think Harrington alluded to it last week, which is kind of, he's in a completely different headspace, that he's turning up at an event that is everyone's dream golfing holiday. Now, that's a wonderful way to look at it, but to be able to do that when you've been 30 years on the road just is a signature of his.
Well, we'll talk about Harrington's win.
But I think in anything you do, it doesn't matter if you're, if you're out doing the garden, you know, it's, you need a bit of enthusiasm to try to do the best you can possibly do. If you're just going through the motions, which is a challenge for these guys, no doubt, week in, week out, they're playing 25 to 30 events a year. It's very difficult. And that's why at times form is fleeting. It's very difficult to be on it properly all the time. That's where Tiger was such a an outlier, really, that he just seemed to bring, whether he was turning up in the Far East for a boatload of cash, he still had the same endeavour every single week. And that's the hardest challenge for all these players.
Yeah, look, I was very pleased to see him win. As I said, I found him a likeable guy. Let me ask you this, right? So the PGA Tour is going to split between the Championship and Challenger Series the season after next. So he won the John Deere. He's won the Sony Open. Two events that won't feature on the Championship Series, they'll be part of the Challenger Tour. So if he's, so obviously Goddard with five wins is a fixture on the Championship Series. This is a player who's obviously going to play at the top level for a bit. Like, he's the strongest player in the John Deere. It's a relatively weak, and I use the term advisedly, you know. But like, under the new system, he wouldn't have had those wins because he would have been a Championship Series player. So like, There's a that fluidity of being able to kind of, yes, you're playing in the signature tournaments, you're going to play against the best players, but also, like, you can pick up points, you can pick up cash, you can pick up tour card certification playing in the likes of a John Deere under the current system. But, like, when it moves to the new system, he's not going to have that flexibility.
You don't really want it. You're in the A team. You know, you want to play in the Champions League, not the Europa League. So I don't think there's an issue with that.
You don't think so?
No, and it'll still unearth, you know, like talent, elite level talent that comes through. It's no different if you're watching the World Cup and it happens every 4 years where one or two players that you've kind of never heard of, you know, put their hand up. And I think this will provide a similar thing. It's just, it's a two-tier system. But for all those guys, you know, it's a journey for everyone, really. And you're going to see a lot of really talented college players coming out and putting their hand up. Like Jackson Koivun is really interesting.
Yeah, he
player coming out.
He played
out.
Well, I thought. Yeah.
You know what? Listen, the bizarre thing about this sport, there's literally, like, this kid is the most exciting talent to come through in probably a long time, and yet he misses the cut, his first event last week. So there's just no guarantees in that transition. Now, I'm actually hoping that he does well, because, you know, it's a tough road for others coming through if he gets out there and he gets caught in the headlights a little bit. But I think you'll unearth, you know, one or two players will come out of this that will become superstars in the future. There's no denying that.
Dave, one of these could very well be Blades Brown, who still, besides Tiger Woods, I think has the best name for a golfer. Like, he's 19 years old, but he's had 7 cuts made from 8 PGA Tour starts, 5 top 25 finishes, multiple top 10s. Like, he's yet to win, but Jesus, like, this kid is, you know, he looks like he's the future that Gary's talking about.
Yeah, he does. Look, but, you know, there may not be as many with the name as, like, ear-catching, rather, if that's the right term, as Blades Brown. But players like him are 10 a penny. Like, the depth of talent is insane now. And we've mentioned it so often on the podcast that the collegiate system is so competitive and it's so structurally sound in terms of its coaching that the vast majority of these players are actually just ready to win when they come out on tour. And that wasn't the case when maybe 15, 20 years ago, you would always hear the veteran PGA Tour professionals talking about having to, you know, find your way, having to settle in, having to learn the ins and outs of every week in, week out PGA Tour life. These lads don't give a shit. They just come out having won, having grown up the best in their category all the way through their juvenile days and through the collegiate system. And they look around at some of these lads who are already in the tour going, we don't really care about your reputation. We don't respect you. We don't respect anything about your past achievements on the golf course. I'm here now and I'm good enough to play. And they're all such brilliant strikers of the ball. And chances are they're longer than the average driver of the golf ball that's already existing in the PGA Tour. They just go out there and they've no fear on the greens. They've brilliant hands around the greens. And fellas like Blades Brown just go out and immediately find themselves in contention, the way Jordan Spieth did when he burst onto the scene. He was just in contention from the very start. Yeah. And we're going to see this an awful lot more. It is obviously going to be harder for these guys to make the immediate breakthrough because as of the break and the new structure in the PGA Tour, the only way to get into the championship series mid-season is to win a major championship. And these guys clearly are unlikely to go on and win a major in their breakout year or in their second year. So they have to buy their time. They have to play well in the Challenger Series. And then they have to get themselves into the top 20. And that's how they're going to do it, as opposed to winning a couple of Challenger events and finding yourself in a signature event. That's where the goalposts have really moved. And obviously give the likes of Chris Goddard the security for an entire year, that if you're on the bubble, you're not going to drop from signature event golf tournaments during the season. You know, you've got the whole year to secure that status. So that's the big difference. So we'll make it slightly harder for a Blades Brown to make that immediate impact. Like, how often do we hear players playing a couple of events and already the commentators are talking about how much money he needs to earn to earn exempt status in the PGA Tour? That's not going to happen anymore.
I do think, though, guys, that I think it's a better progression as well, because I'm a bit old school on this. I'm still not 100% convinced that giving a standout amateur player 18 months full ride on the PGA Tour is, I'm not sure there's a massive element of fairness on that. You know, if you think about the, now I know nobody cares about him, but like the 101 guy. So I think coming through the Challenger Series, you know, and if you're schooling guys at that level, fair enough, and you move up and all that sort of stuff. But, and then the other thing is, you don't want these kids to get in too deep too soon and they can get blown out. Like even Miles Russell or Blades Brown, I do think we're going to see shorter careers. There's going to be a massive burnout for a lot of these guys. Like if Miles Russell continues to do what he's doing, he's going to be an old 26.
Mm.
You know, I think the 26-year-old now is nearly your 35-year-old of years gone by. So I think that, you know, no different to Europe with a bit of hotel planner time and then you get on the DP World Tour. It doesn't all have to happen yesterday either. Like it's a completely different sport when you're living on the road for 20 odd weeks in the year. So I think it's maybe a better thing for trying to get a bit more longevity. And, you know, with all of them, if they're going to get through, they're going to get through anyway. It doesn't matter what the obstacles are on their path.
Yeah, it's just going to take a little bit longer,
yeah.
A bit more patience.
But to your point, Dave, like, I mean, you're dead right. You know, these guys are coming in, like, honed for competitive challenges. Like, there's no Curtis Strange saying, you learn to Tiger Woods.
There was a time when, maybe not Tiger, but the vast majority of these young guys coming out on tour would have looked up to a Curtis Strange and they would have taken his words and considered them. Could you imagine the Curtis Strange equivalent now speaking to a Blades Brown? He might in person acknowledge and go, yes, Curtis, thanks for those sound words, while in his head going, what do you know?
And yet, conversely, there's no doubt that these guys are sharpened by collegiate golf and they come in more primed for the pro game than at any other time. But like, there's a lot to be said. Gary said it earlier, or you talked about it briefly. But like, if you were a young Irish player coming on tour, the older Irish players would really take you under their wing. There was a kind of a hothousing process where like they teach you about life on the road, they teach you about like how to deal with the disappointments or whatever it is. And you know, I've heard Peter Laurie talk about this, I've heard Paul McGinley talk about this, is that the older guys, just not as a duty of care, because ultimately, you know, all golfers are largely selfish individuals. Sorry, Gary. But like, you know, you're taking care of your own career, but that there was a sense that, like, I'm sure, Gary, it must have been the same for you. Like, I don't know, who maybe gave you a few wise words when you, you know, turned pro.
I think there's a couple of things on that. It's like, you know, if you're a young stud and you come out and tour and you have your agency and all that sort of stuff, they literally just have a vested interest to make money from you.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of two-pronged with a young Irish guy comes out on tour. And I was very lucky when I came out. I obviously knew Porrick very well, so that kind of took care of itself. I didn't play the amateur scene the same time as McGillney or Clark. But they want to... The way I felt it was, I had Des Smith and Philip Alton and Eamon Darcy. So they're old guys still hanging around, prolonging their career. And obviously they had amazing careers, three Ryder Cup players. So there's the vested interest nearly for them is they want to see what these young lads are like, and it helps their game. And then, you know, a rising boat lifts all tides, or whatever the line is.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
So it helps their games because there's a young buck coming out, and that helps them.
But Gary, sorry to interrupt you. When you come out of tour, it was just you and your caddy, right? Like, of an entourage. They form their own little bubbles before they even go out on tour. They've all got their dietitian and their partners and their golf coach and their putting coach and their nutritionist and their physiotherapist.
I understand that, but no one knows the nuances of life on tour better than people that have walked that path. But and like, I would have learned more in practice rounds playing. Like my practice round was a lot of the time was me and Waltz against the Darce and Smithy. Like, if and you just and the thing I annoys me a lot now with younger players. Like, I was watching them like a hawk. I was asking questions all the time. It's happened to me so much in the last 10 years where you go out and play with young fellas and they don't ask you anything.
Can you give us an example, Gary, of something like almost jarring that they said to you, or a piece of advice they offered you? You just thought, oh,
but someone like Des Smith, like a simple thing. Like, I played with Des in Portmarnock years ago, and he hit a shot. It was a particularly windy day. It was off tour. It wasn't on tour. And he hit a shot from 80 yards into the ninth on the third course in Portmarnock. And, like, it was hip height all the way in. And I was like, how do you play that shot? Like, I couldn't play that shot. And then he explained it to me, and you're like, oh, my goodness, I've never seen that shot. So the experience of different things, and then life on the road, where to stay, who to hang around with, who not to hang around with. Just all the little nuances that sometimes have very little to do with life on tour. And and then just watching them, how professional they were and how they're prepared. All those. And then you're looking up to these people and just going for dinner with them. Like, we went for dinner one night. I think there was about 11 of us in a restaurant in Madrid. And just the crack of it. And the slagging and the banter, but yet you're dealing with elite athletes who've achieved so much, and just the way they manage themselves and all those small little things. And that's the worry nowadays. And that's why, you know, you've got Stuart Graham next week and you've got David Howard next week. And it's imperative that they can experience that stuff Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, just to relax themselves into the tournament, because the thing is, once Thursday sounds, everyone's on their own and it's everyone for themselves. But if you're a little bit more prepared, you've had that exposure to maybe playing with Shane or Rory or Porrick. And I've said it to both guys, you know, if there's someone that you like and is, just look at the draw sheet on a Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday and stick your name down beside him and go out there and play with him and bend his ear. Now, if he tells you to F off, well, learn from that too, because that's kind of part of it as well. But, you know, if Scotty Scheffler is on the timesheet at 8:30, stick your name down beside him. Hi, Scotty, how are you doing? I'm whoever. And just always go to the fire. I think that's the important thing.
It's actually, you know, fascinating.
If you run away from the fire, you know, maybe you don't get burnt, but you don't learn anything either. And I think that's the sad thing about looking at DP World now, you know. Tom McKibben will come back and play in a couple, but, you know, if some kid gets an invite, maybe he's there with his team and he's got some lad giving him banana sandwiches and stretching him, but there's a bit more to life than that.
I remember Kieran McMonagall, who used to play the Sunshine Tour a good bit with Peter Lawrie, and he was telling me that, like, you know, similar to what you're just describing, he would always learn from the other guys who had a bit more experience than him. But, like, one of the key things, and it makes absolute sense, but it's about managing your money. It's about, like, you know, renting cars, all the little things, because life on the road will determine so much of your mindset when you onto the golf course. And
Fionn, here's a perfect example, right?
Go on.
So I played in the K Club on Monday on the South Course, which is spectacular. But we're trying to set up an Irish kind of mini tour,
right?
Okay, so we've had four events, which is kind of PGA. PGA, mostly PGA pros and a few washed up pros like myself. And it's basically trying to get pros to play together. And I played with the great Peter Lawrie on Monday.
All right.
And Brian McCormack and Ger Hall. And so obviously, as we know, Peter's had major issues with his eyes and stuff, and he's not really playing anymore. But he hit a shot on, and he played lovely, as he always does. His iron play, even though he doesn't play anymore, is still elite. And we played the 17th hole. And the learning for me was, I was hitting a 7-iron. Peter's about a half a club longer than me. It was a good 7-iron for me. It's a very difficult hole. It's a front pin. There's no margin for error. And I hit a 7-iron. I mishitted, but it was kind of right and pin high. But it wasn't a good strike. So Peter Lawrie is up next. And he hits a 7-iron. He just balloons it up into the air, into the wind, because he knew he had the perfect club because he watched me. He saw what I did. And he went, if I throw this up in the air, it's just the perfect club. And I said it to him. I said, you ripped about 15 years off the calendar there. That was old style class shot. But those little nuances and the two guys, Brian and Jared, playing with us, you know, they missed club. They kind of, they didn't see, didn't learn from watching. Peter was watching me like a hawk to see what I was doing. So all those little things determine, they might have that shot in 6 months' time in a certain situation and learn from it. So you can learn so much from, now we missed the putt, which I was delighted about, but there you
go.
But, you know, and they're valuable little nuggets that you can get along the way. And that's why I think it's important for our guys to hang out, you know, the kids coming through, to hang out as much at next week if they can. I mean, just like I played in the Open in 03, and my practice round was Porrick and Paul and Darren. The place is rammed on a Tuesday. Butch Harmon's walking around, Gary Lineker, Alan Hansen. You know, it was better than some tour events you're playing. Yeah. And it's bloody Tuesday on a practice. So, and just embrace the moment and try to learn from it, really.
Come here, did you ever play credit card roulette?
Well, that was the dinner in Madrid, and there was 11 of us for dinner.
Do you know about this, Dave?
Yeah, but I think we tend to approach it from the opposite viewpoint, where the last card out doesn't pay.
Oh, right.
Gary ended up having to pay for the whole thing here as well.
No, we were in this famous steakhouse, and maybe there was only 10 of us, I can't remember. And we were doing credit card roulette, and it was my rookie year on tour. And and I wasn't having a great year at all. And it was down to Darren Clark and myself, the last two cards. And thankfully, Darren had to pay for dinner. But I was paying for dinner, and that was it. And that was going to be, and there's a little lesson. Like, let's say, I don't know what the dinner was, but say it was $2,000 or whatever it was. Like, I'd have played a lot harder on Friday had I done $2,000 on dinner the night before. And that's a little life lesson too. But thankfully, Darren had more than me, and he had to pay for dinner.
Let's get back, sorry, to the John Deere. Just a thought of sympathy for poor old Ben Coles.
Yeah.
Water ball 18, three putt then, went from finishing second on his own, dropped down the field.
$300,000 it cost him.
Yeah.
Nice drop on the green, though, wasn't it? Yeah. The red hazard. I agree with that. I think, you know, you've landed it on the green, it's gone on the water. I think yellow hazard there is unbelievably severe.
Yeah.
Now, I know
you have to go back on the line.
Yeah, well, you're taking six or seven into the equation, aren't you? Well, you drop it on two, put it in, just spend $300,000 in 5 minutes. It's not so bad.
So he had a similar fall away in the Byron Nelson. Like, what do we think? Like, Gary...
Same shot, I think, was it?
Huh?
I think it was the same shot too, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, it's not easy win.
No.
Such a bad shot though, Gary. Like, he's drawing the ball towards the water. Like, and now he clearly doesn't mean, he's pulled it obviously. So he's not looking to put it inside the pin. But, I mean, what sort of a shot should he be hitting there to ensure that he hits the fat of the green and leaves himself a 25 footer for the birdie that would see him win the tournament?
I actually watched the highlights on, rewatched the highlights again on YouTube, and then the algorithm brought back to Spieth when he won in the playoff at the John Deere 10 years ago, and he hit it in the trees, right. But the shot he hit, just try punch cut something up the green and chase it down there. But I think the fact that he was playing well and he kind of saw the shot and tried to execute it, you know, it's hard at that time if the caddy says to him, why don't you just punch cut it in there? Yeah. He's basically saying to him, don't hit it in the pistol.
Having smashed a drive down the middle of the fairway.
You know, so I think he went for it and it didn't happen. And it's a kind of heartbreaking loss, but it's a great finishing hole that's produced some stellar drama over the years, you know.
It feels to me that, like, I think it's a better course than, whatchamacallit, the TPC River Highlands. Like, TPC River Highlands, obviously, it's a great event. They get an elite field. They have good sponsors, the Travelers, you know. But it seems to me that, like, I think this course is better where they play the John Deere.
Oh, it is. And listen, there's It's just a date. It's a bit like the Irish Open years ago when it was, you know, hanging around the Open Championship. You know, the date. Although Molinari played the John Deere, he finished third, and he went on to win the following week in Carnoustie. So,
yeah.
You know, there's no... These guys are so versatile nowadays. Big thing for them is getting over and trying to get in the time zone. You know, they can adapt. Like Gutterup, this is what it was, his first Lynx experience last year, and he won the Scottish Open. So, and guys can get a lot out of this week too. Morikawa won a Royal St. George's, and he changed to a bladed iron after playing the Scottish Open because he was just getting too much bounce out of the cavities.
Mm.
And he schooled everyone around Royal St. George's. So, you know, they're very versatile. I wouldn't, you know, there's no one-trick ponies that much anymore, I don't think. And obviously, the only thing might be with the weather this week being so good, they're not going to get heavy air. If Birkdale, it should be decent enough. I don't know what the long-range forecast is, but they mightn't get that true knockdown shot this week that some of them might try acquire on the week. But it's just great to see. I think it's great to see Ram and Hatton back playing European stuff too. That's, you know, it's an unbelievable field.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the Scottish Open, lads, we got to talk about Padraig Harrington's third US Senior Open at Scioto, or he won it at Scioto with the closing round 66. I mean, Jesus Christ. What can we say? What more can we say about Padraig Harrington's career?
Like, no, nothing really.
It's actually unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and I know, like, I'm going to hold my, when Montgomery won a senior, won the Senior Open, I think, I can't remember which one it was, and then kind of made a big point of saying, this is just like winning a major. And we all scoffed and went, you ever fuck off, we just stop. But like, Harrington's got his three, you know, majors, and he's just adding senior majors. Like, Jesus, this career of his, he's awesome.
I actually, one thing I will say about Paddy is that if you, because the consumption now that golfers have, and I would get it a lot on lessons, guys coming up to me and they're literally shaken from looking at shite on YouTube, and they don't know if it's a backswing or a downswing, or they don't know what to do. If you literally just went, I'm not going to look at anybody anymore and just look at his stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, it's because very good, isn't it?
It's so real. It's so simple. It's explained so well. It will not do you a disservice to just go, I'm just going to stick with Harrington and I'll never chip and putt like he does. But if I can kind of do a little bit, like his YouTube channel is amazing. And because we
he's
all
like
know
the Doc Brown of golf.
I was thinking about it the other day. I was watching, he was doing a chipping thing the other day because we were playing amateur golf. He just haunted me with a short game. But, and I think he's actually doing this whole thing for himself because he loves to talk. Absolutely. We were doing a thing years ago and he goes, if there's one thing I like more than playing golf, it's talking. And I think it just serves him so well that he has this platform now that he can get up there for 15, 20 minutes and help. There's no denying he's helped so many golfers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, alongside, but the fact that he just gets to chat away about his golf, he's infectious. He's fantastic.
I was watching a thing, Dave, and I know he loves to talk because, look, we've had him on the podcast where, like, we've been apologetically saying to him, look, we only need you for, say, 20 minutes. You know, we know you're busy. And three quarters of an hour later, it's like,
yeah,
Paddy's still kind of going. And look, we long may it go because, like, the benefit of Harrington's character and wisdom is unbelievable. But I was watching a thing where, and I know famously he has this thing where he doesn't let you talk to his moving ball. Like, he goes, it drives him mental. And you know this, Gary, obviously. But, like,
yeah.
I was watching a little video clip where, I don't know, he's playing, like, social golf with somebody. And, like, the guy goes, be good, be good. And he goes, don't talk to my ball. Don't talk to my ball. Don't talk to my ball. And the guy's like, well, I'm just saying. And he goes, be good. And he goes, no, what you're doing is you're imparting your own anxiety about the effects of the shot. And he goes, and in fairness, I have to say, I've always thought that was always a bit mad. Like, you know, is it that, like, what does talking to a moving ball, what difference does it make?
It's the game, Fionn. Just, that's what it does. I'm not going to mention a name, but I know a guy, former tour player, who was playing in a local pro-am, and he hit a 30-footer on the first. and it's going up to the hole. It's 2 feet out. It's dead center. Can't miss. And the amateur goes, get in the hole. And it horseshoes out and sits on the back. And the pro goes, don't speak to my golf ball. Yeah. He goes, I'll actually go one better. I won't speak to you. And he turned around and he walked in.
That's very funny. Harrington said, the only thing you're allowed to say to a moving ball is, and I have to say, I love this, the way he said it. He goes, you can say good shot, but only if I've hit a good shot. And so really what he's saying is this, I'll determine whether it was a good shot or not. And if you can read my mind and know that I've said, and I've thought this is a good shot, then you can say good shot. Otherwise, just shut up. And I love I think years ago, I heard a story that were at Christmas time, I think he was playing with his brother and the two of them agreed that they would have like a casual round in Stackstown or wherever. And it was just like, and the agreement was, is that the brother wouldn't talk to Paddy's moving ball, but Paddy wouldn't give the brother any lessons during the round. And he goes, and if we can agree to that, then we'll play. I thought, listen, Dave, like, I know we've said it a million times and it's almost a cliche at this stage, but this lad is a national treasure. He is like one of the absolute greatest sports people this country has ever produced and can, like, long may he reign.
Yeah, he's beloved. And, you know, he's been beloved for 20 years, 25 years at this stage. Like, I've always loved this man and I've always loved watching him play. He's a winner and people love winners, but he's also an unbelievably nice guy. People love those sorts of men and women as well. And he is the sort of guy who you can point towards when you're looking to inspire your children to go out there and be the best that they can absolutely be. And, like, you know, I've got two boys who are mad into playing sports. And I'm always saying to them, and I coach them as well, I'll never give out to you for giving the ball away or making the wrong decision or, you know, missing a chance. But I will give out to you for never working on your game and turning up and not trying your best.
Yeah.
100%. That's when I will become frustrated with you and I'll probably speak a bit harshly with you. And you can point to Padraig Harrington as a man who's gone out there with no ego and not the talent that he would have been up against as a child and a juvenile growing up and wrung every last drip of success that he possibly could have out of his career, not just from his teens. Here he is in his approaching his mid-50s and he's still doing it. And the love that he has for the game and the seemingly insatiable hunger and drive is, I'm not sure he can teach that to anybody because he's clearly loving being out there competing. You know, he's become just the second guy ever to win 3 US Senior Opens and it's coming at the perfect time for him as well. Obviously winning now and he's playing in Scotland this week and he's obviously going to be playing at the Open. He's booked himself a trip to the US Open next year. So he's going to get mm-hmm. to play in 3 of the 4 major championships yeah. again next season in his mid-50s. He's picked up another $800,000 for himself. Not that that matters because he's obviously won more of the money than.
But it always matters a bit.
But it's still lovely coin.
Ah, yeah. Look. Yeah.
Yeah. He cruised home.
He's playing 8 weeks in a row. So he played the Canadian Open, then he played the US Open, and then he played the Dix Open on the Champions Tour, which he's won. I think he's won that 2 or maybe 3 times. And then he's played the US Open. And now he's going to Scotland and the Open Championship. And then he's going to Portugal. So if anyone's down in Portugal in the next couple of weeks, there's a mixed event between the Champions Tour and the Legends Tour. And if they want to give me an invite, I'm more than happy to play with Padraig down there. But
absolutely.
So he's 50. Padraig is 55 in August and he's playing 8 weeks in a row.
And what's interesting is he's given up. He opted not to play the Senior Players Championship, which is a Firestone this week. And it's like, what, an hour and a half's drive away from Scioto in Ohio. And he's opting instead to fly across to play the Scottish Open as prep for the Open Championship. This is a guy who, I mean, I can't read his mind. I don't know that he honestly believes in his heart of hearts that he's going to contend, but there's a part of me also thinks, well, I think he does.
Well, like, he knows there's a certain set of circumstances, Gary, in which he can compete. Like, case in point, this year's PGA Championship, which he wasn't necessarily contention. He finished 8 shots out of the lead, but he spoke about it afterwards. He said, this is the kind of golf course on which I can contend, where it's really tough and the vast majority of players in the field just won't be able to deal with it. But where he knows that he can, because it's a big leveler when it comes to the distance that he lacks off the tee in comparison to the big hitters, the young bucks that are playing around him. And if he's putting and chipping well, which he does more often than not, he should be in a great position. And he putted the light out in the US Open there over the last
week. That's what I mean. It's just like, look, a links course suits a Harrington. Obviously, he's won two majors on a links. So let's talk a bit about
win an Open, Fionn, couldn't
sorry,
he?
Go on.
If he was on the right side of the draw,
yeah,
Thursday and Friday, and the wind howled on Saturday and Sunday.
Well, yeah, he
potentially win an Open.
He's a much better player, and he's more mentally dynamic than Norman was at the time when he, at what, 57 or 58, was leading the Open going into
Tom
Watson was 4 years older again. Yeah, Norman had a great run around 2000. And,
you know,
No, but Norman was leading in Birkdale when Porrick won. So, you know, Porrick is way more, if Porrick is in that position on the Sunday that Norman was in at Birkdale in 08, like, Porrick is way more equipped to handle that environment. Like, Greg Norman was pretty much a part-time player at that stage.
But like, winning's a habit. Like, Harrington wins, you know, he's like, and look what, and where he can't really contend is on those courses that demand, you know, 330 off the tee. Yeah. Like, you know, that's fine. But like, Birkdale isn't going to be that kind of test. It's going to be a test of a whole bunch of other stuff. Right. Listen, let's talk a bit about the Scottish Open. As always, like, this remarkably strong field. This is now like the premier event as a co-sanctioned between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. You've got Scheffler, McIlroy, Schauffele, Hovland, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick, John Rahm, Gary, as you mentioned, Chris Goddard is going to be there, Bob McIntyre, Justin Thomas, and Porrick Harrington, of course. This is a class field for a class event, and it's one I look forward to every single year.
It is, and I think Shane Lowry, it's a huge week for Shane Lowry.
Oh, sorry.
Shane's got two big weeks now, you know, kind of fed up FedEx Cup-wise. He's dropped about 53rd in the FedEx.
Yeah.
This, like, should suit him down to the ground. I think Birkdale will suit him. I can't remember what he did in 16, but he should be licking his chops at these 2 weeks. And there's also that added thing that he needs to play well. So that should sharpen his focus in a totally different environment too. It'll feel like more, whilst it's a PGA Tour ranking event. Now, the field is astonishingly good, but I think this is going to be, you know, a fantastic week. There's going to be a lot of, you know, guys, you know, and I wouldn't be looking at maybe the guy that wins it as such, but a lot of guys form-wise, you know, keep an eye, if you're looking towards next week, keep an eye on the top 20 or guys that, you know, maybe sneak in a top 10 and get a, you know, full links experience, but a huge event, you know.
It's massive.
The only thing that's kind of sad on it is, you know, there's a co-sanctioned event in America this week. Like, it's really not gone down the order of merit at all for your standard DP World Tour card holder. So it's elite level tournament. And I think we've seen over the years, it's produced some outstanding finishes when Minwoo Lee won, McIntyre and Rory. And they've changed the course around. They've changed the finish on this. So it's going to be a really dramatic finish. They've not switched the nines, but they've changed about the routing on about three or four holes. So it should be a class week.
Yeah. Also see Oberg, Patrick Reed's in the field, Tyrrell Hatton. There's three names that could easily do well this week. One player, Dave, who Charlie Hoffman got a sponsor's exemption. He's 544th in the world. He's missed virtually every cut of the season.
Wow.
He has no connection to Genesis, the primary sponsor. He's clearly not Scottish. He has literally no connection to this event, but he gets a sponsor's exemption. And if I was someone like Richie Ramsey, for instance, who didn't get invited, despite being an obvious name that really could be invited, I'd be pissed off. But like, that's the way of golf. But like, Jesus Christ, like, is the field enhanced in any way by the presence of Charlie Hoffman?
He's a nice green glove.
Jesus. But like, do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's look, and I'm sorry, it's not picking on Charlie Hoffman specifically, but it's this weird randomization of like I can't see why he would get a sponsor's exemption, and particularly if it's not going to cost someone like Richie Ramsey a place, and I'm picking Richie Ramsey as just an obvious name, like that'd be fine. But like,
well, let's just look. It's just the way that that system has worked for eons, and it's probably in certain cases it's still about who you know, and no doubt Charlie Hoffman knows somebody somewhere or has written a letter or has got somebody to write a letter on his behalf. And look, he's struggling, obviously, Charlie Hoffman. He's had a really good career, long career. He's kind of been a staple for PGA Tour watching fans over for the last 15-20 seasons, but he's obviously still using that to his advantage, and fair play to him, because look, you got to do what you got to do to get yourself into these fields. There's always going to be somebody that has missed out because somebody well outside the rankings has picked up a spot. But you get into these events on merit for the most part, and a lot of people will turn around and say to Richie Ramsey, well, play better golf. Get into these events off your own back.
But I mean, you could make that. Sorry, I take your point, and you're entirely right. And I don't want to come across as like a naive fool. I understand the system. I guess when you see it happen, is that like you could say, sure, Richie, play better golf. I mean, you could also say to Charlie Hoffman, sorry, dude, you're not playing well enough. So
yeah, well, somebody could have said that too, but they just haven't on this occasion.
But as well, Fionn, there's a PGA Tour event on in the States this week, so I think go play that. I think John Rahm is fascinating this week.
Let's talk about John Rahm, because this is the first PGA Tour affiliated event he's played in since joining LIV.
Yeah, he's going to win, I think. That'll be the story.
Holy shit. Can you imagine if he wins? Like,
They have a one-year ban because Stenson's last LIV event was in August last year, so he can't play Champions Tour until August this year. But it's great for the event. I mean, John Rahm's won the Irish Open twice.
Yeah.
When he won in Lahinch, that was probably carnival-wise the best Irish Open ever. Obviously Rory was spectacular last year because of the emotion around it, but at a time when the event needed a huge lift, that weekend in Lahinch was phenomenal. I was down there last weekend. I actually saw the Walker Cup trophy, which was about the same size as my 14-year-old kid.
It's in Lahinch in early
It's in
September.
Lahinch, yeah. They totally revamped the clubhouse. It's absolutely spectacular, the whole place. But just to see the Walker Cup, you know, for anyone's interested in watching golf, like, it's down to Lahinch. It's £30 for the tickets for the weekend.
Unbelievable, I know. We're going to talk about it. Actually, it's funny. I wrote a thing about the Walker Cup, for the RNA, but that's separate. But it kind of has awakened the interest, and I was like, we got to do something around the Walker Cup, kind of closer to the event itself. Because I agree with you. I think just the spectacle of hosting the Irish Open 2019 in Lahinch the weather. It was the fact that it's got that St. Andrews feel where the golf course finishes in the town, in the heart of the town.
Robert Rock had a putt on the last 59, and all the members were vomiting down their Lahinch sweaters at the thoughts of someone breaking 60
on their
sacred turf. I think the goats would have charged the green had the ball gone in. But it's an amazing place. It really is. And Rahm, the thing on Rahm, like, he's a links specialist. You know, he won around Port Stewart. Only the greats can win around there, thank you. But, and he won in Lahinch too. And I think he'll have a serious vested interest this week in trying to go.
For sure.
I wouldn't say fingers up, but he'll be keen to try to get a win this week.
Okay, lads. Pick your winners.
I'll go for John Rahm because I've just bigged him up. And I think that it'll be a huge storyline as well. You know, obviously winning around Port Stewart, Lahinch, did well in Ballyliffin too, I think. And he's going to play in Doombeg in the Irish Open as well.
Yeah.
Which is huge for the event. So I'll go for John Rahm this week.
Dave?
Yeah, Gary really got in a limb there, back in the third favourite of the betting.
Yeah.
I think Schauffele is going to return to the Ooh. Players Arena this week.
Oh, nice.
Threatening all season. And he's slowly, very slowly getting back to the sort of form that he showed when he won two majors in the same season. So I think Schauffele will win this week and it's going to go very close next week.
Okay, I like that prediction. I'm going to go for Tyrrell Hatton.
Do you remember he lost his mind here last year, Finn? John?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember that on the, was it the 12th green or something?
That's right. I love Tyrrell Hatton. They're like we were saying earlier on about Chris Goddard being a player who can win. Like he knows Tyrrell Hatton. I mean, I know, look, there's that lingering thing that his explosive personality perhaps stops him from truly realizing his potential. But I think there's something about him. I think he's a proper player. And yeah, he's my bet for this week. Lads, so that's it. Next week, of course, we have the Open Championship, the last major of the season. And then it'll be a kind of a leisurely ride throughout the rest of the golfing year.
Johnny, you
come major of the season and it'll be over like in what the night.
Well, we've got the Irish Open.
It's just that feeling as you're turning off the covers. I know it's All Ireland Hurling Final Day, World Cup Final Day. There's going to be plenty.
The 19th of July.
Yeah, it'll be the greatest day in the history of sporting television. But
I was talking to the occasional friend of the pod, Damon Delaney, the other day, who was heartbroken that his Cork team were beaten by Galway because he had primed it was going to be the Open Championship, the World Cup final, and Cork in the hurling. And he was just like, oh, Jesus. Yeah, absolutely gutted he was.
Well, they're getting really used to that sort of that feeling, unfortunately, Cork hurling fans. It's just amazing that he was able to mend his heart in just 12 months after the back of what happened in last year's All-Ireland.
It's so bizarre. Sorry, Gary, you were going to say something.
Are you coming down to watch the Legends in Carlton House this weekend?
I am going to come down.
Cool.
Yeah, I will come down. I'll be there on Saturday.
Yeah, and the forecast is mental, so which is
mental,
fantastic.
Mental good, as in it's going to be warm.
Mental good.
The Irish Open or what is it, Gary?
The Irish Open Seniors, yeah.
Yeah.
God,
I think the OFX Irish Legends Open is it.
I played in the Pro-Am for that when it was up, not Bowtray. Where was it up in the northeast somewhere? Where was it?
Sea Point.
That's what it was. Played with Peter.
When I win it, Fiona, it will be the new fifth major.
I hope so. Well, yeah. What time? Anyway, I'll talk to you separately, but I will absolutely come down to watch you play. Do you need someone to carry the sticks for you?
No, I actually had a bit of a drama with that because Greg Millen, who guy from Waterford, who caddies on the PGA Tour, did the Ryder Cup for Bob McIntyre, caddied for him for 3 years. He caddied for me last year.
So he can take the abuse that you're going to give him.
Yeah, and he was going to caddy this week, just trying to help me out. But Sam Valimaki is first reserve in Scotland, and he got the nod to go over. Hopefully, I don't know why he's trying to work in a 9 million event compared to 400 grand, but there you go.
I've told this story before on the pod, but the only time I've ever carried, twice I've done it, but like I carried the clubs for Kieran McMonagall when he was trying to qualify for the Open Championship at Baltrae. And is it the second last is a long par three or a medium par three? So anyway, and I was so tired from the day that Kieran turns around to me just before he hits and goes, so come here, what do you think? And I went, 4 iron? Like this, and he went, would you fucking stop? And then just like hit a soft eight. And I went, and I looked at him and I went, sorry, I thought you meant what would I hit on this hole?
Yeah, because that's relevant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The way he said it to me, would you ever fuck off, will you? We were playing, I must text Kieran and ask him, but I don't even know if he remembers. We were playing with this Swedish young guy who maybe went on to have a pro career. I don't know. But he hit the ball so far. I was just like Kieran was always like, pretty. Gary, you remember Kieran McMonagall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He hit the ball a decent length. Like he wasn't, he wasn't a monster, but he wasn't short by any means. But this Swedish guy was like 50 yards past him on every hole. It was shocking. I was just like, anyway, and this is a long time ago. Yeah.
Just as well you didn't give him the 4 iron, it would have landed in the clubhouse.
Jesus, I know. Anyway, look, lads, enjoy the Scottish Open. I will be down to see you on Saturday for sure, Gar, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Boys, enjoy the weekend.
And
all my exes wear Rolexes. Keep
Hello, it's Owen Chehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.